This is a production of Cornell University.
Thank you for the introduction and Norm for the opportunity to be here. So I'm going to talk about computational sustainability in a nutshell. This is a new interdisciplinary field that aims to apply computational techniques to solve computational challenges in sustainability. We have here the core members of the Institute for Computational Sustainability at Cornell. I would like to start by thanking them for their many contributions towards a vision for this exciting new field. I also want to point out the fact that we have a very interdisciplinary group. Several speakers mentioned that, but indeed, for us to address these questions, we really need a diverse group. We have, obviously, computer science. I'm a computer science. We have mathematicians. We have also biologists, sociologists, economists. So really, it's a very interdisciplinary group. As Lance mentioned, four years ago, we received an NSF expedition in computing. These are large grants comparable to centers, really. And the idea was to, the idea is to give the computer scientists an opportunity to put forward a big vision for the field. So we propose this field, and it has been quite an interesting. So basically, I would say sustainability is a fundamentally new territory for computer science. And the unique scale and complexity of these problems really pose deep challenges and deep research questions for computer science, which leads to new approaches, new methodologies, new algorithms in computer science, which in turn have a broad range of applications across different domains. And this is actually one point that I will emphasize in this talk, the fact that computer science tend to look at problems not as an application per se, but broad classes as classes of problems, and then we can transfer knowledge from one domain to another one. And in fact, I think that's exactly why we should really focus on sustainability issues, so that we can really leverage the tremendous advancements in terms of information technology. But at the same time, and that is quite interesting, because of the unique features of these problems, we are exposed to fundamentally new questions that push us to develop these new methods and also advance the state of the art of computer science. Several the previous speakers mentioned all the levels of complexity. We typically want to predict and manage these complex systems. In order to understand them, we collect vast amounts of data. We are dealing with multiple temporal and spatial scales, stochastic and uncertainty environments, and obviously, all these components interact in a highly non-linear way with interdependence, which really makes these problems very challenging. Clearly, there's a need for computer science. Well, I just want to emphasize that our view in terms of sustainability is the view that sustainability encompasses balancing environmental, economic, and societal needs, which often that's not the case when it comes to information technology, where they tend to emphasize, for example, just increasing energy efficiency. Now, we fully share the view that all these aspects are interrelated, so we really need to look at the interdependency of these problems. Here is the outline of my talk. I will talk about computational sustainability, and in particular, I want to emphasize the role of computing and information science to solve the computational challenge in sustainability. I will talk a little bit about this notion of universality of computational models and how this is important for us to really transfer knowledge from different domains. Then I will talk a little bit about some examples and projects at Cornell. And because the previous speakers emphasized energy, I will actually talk about biodiversity. And I will mention the Institute for Computational Sustainability and how we are building a research community way beyond Cornell. So we are, this year is the centennial of Alan Turing. Alan Turing was a British mathematician, and in 1936, he proposed a mathematical formulation for rigorously defining the notion of computation and computability. Don't worry, I'm not going to go over mathematical models, but what is exciting about this model is that, de facto, this mathematical model is the abstract model of a digital computer. And in fact, it's rich enough to capture any computational process. Well, it's so powerful that we refer to this as a machine, a universal Turing machine that really corresponds to the information process model of a universal computer. Von Neumann proposed the Von Neumann architecture, that is really the architecture of modern computers, and that is really inspired by the work by Turing. Well, another key aspect about the way computer science approaches problems is typically we do not look at an application in isolation. We look at classes of problems, and here you have the problem that I'm sure you have often checked for directions. And when you ask for directions, what you are doing is really asking Google to solve what we call a shortened path problem in a network. Well, here I'm going to give you a completely different problem. I'm start worrying about this because I have a 14-year-old. And here is, we have this problem where Alice is going to college, and her parents gave her a car fund of $20,000 to purchase and maintain a 3-year-old used car for college. Here we have the maintenance costs and the trade-in values. And the question is, when should Alice trade in her car, if at all, during the next 3 summers? So this application is radically different from asking Google for directions. Yet the problems are isomorphic. So basically, I can solve and find an optimal solution for this problem by also solving a shortest path problem. So this is really important, and it emphasizes the fact that by looking at problems as classes of problems as opposed to a single application, we can transfer knowledge from one application to another. You may be familiar also with the traveling salesman problem. And here, given a list of cities, we want to find the shortest possible tool that visits each city exactly once. Well, this problem has many applications in logistics, transportation, etc., but also VLSI design and many, many applications. You may think this problem is very similar to the previous one, but actually, that's not the case. And in fact, we have a very clear way of differentiating problems. We categorize problems or differentiate them between easy and hard. If we can solve them in polynomial time, we say that we have a good algorithm and an easy problem. And that's the case of the shortest path or linear programming, etc. But on the other hand, problems such as the TSP, the traveling salesman problem, these are really inherently hard problems. We believe they are intractable, that they really scale exponentially. And for example, if we want to find a tour for 32 cities, in the worst case, we may need 10 to the 35 steps, which for you to have a notion of 10 to the 25 is the number of microseconds since the Big Bang. So the point that I want to make is these problems really scale exponentially. And in order to solve them, we really need to be careful. And we cannot just use simulation. And often the traditional view of computation is, in science, just let's simulate the phenomena. Well, that will be problematic because the scale is essentially proportional to the domain size, and we need to do better. What we do is typically we try to exploit problem structure and have clever ideas that will allow us to scale the problems and obtain exponential speedups and, for example, generate a massive number of scenarios. Well, like the TSP, there are many, many problems that are computationally hard. And the message that I want to leave here is, in order for us to tackle these problems, I have to say that the plot that I showed represents worst-case behavior. So in practice, we tend to do better, but we really need to exploit the structure of these problems in order to scale up solutions. So over the last 50 years, we have witnessed a dramatic growth in terms of information technology, in terms of hardware and software. We went from the ENIAC to PCs to cloud computing, but also way more exciting computers such as the Deep Blue that was able to defeat Kasparov, or the driverless car, or the Watson that was able to defeat the two greatest Jeopardy champions. All these are variations of the universal computer, and by changing, the idea is by changing basically the sensors, the input sensors and output actuators, and the software, a single machine can perform many, many tasks. And perhaps the best analogy of this universal machine is the iPhone. The iPhone, we can have, it can be a phone, a music player, a calculator, a TV, a video camera, etc., etc. So there are incredible opportunities by using this approach, and we believe that we can really transfer this technology for computational sustainability. And in fact, the next, I truly believe that new directions in computer science really, a key theme is how we can infuse computational thinking into other disciplines. And a good example of the power of computational methods is Google Translator. You may have used it. I am Portuguese, and I have to say it's very hard for me to give a technical talk in Portuguese. So now and then I actually use Google to see how Google would translate a paper in English into Portuguese. And I'm always amazed because it's outstanding. And yet, you know, this translator, basically, this is a highly complex machine and statistical learning model automatically trained on thousands of examples. And Of course, Google has the special situation of having tons of labeled examples because of the European Union that requires that all the documents have to be translated. So, but there's no explicit underlying linguistic model, and yet, and in fact, in general, the programs don't even know the language, and the results are outstanding. So we believe that because of this notion of the universality of computational models, we can really transfer these computation advances into other applications, and in particular into the field of computational sustainability. So, again, in a nutshell, computational sustainability is this new interdisciplinary field that aims to develop computational models, methods, and tools for sustainable development. And the analogy is a bit, if you are familiar with computational biology, this is a two-way street between sustainability fields and computer science and related fields. On one hand, we get new challenge applications for computer science. Hopefully, we'll be able to inject some computational thinking that will provide new insights into sustainability problems and also new methodologies. But at the same time, we also import new methodologies in computer science. So, I thought I would give you an example, and different from the previous speakers, I will talk a little bit about biodiversity and conservation. And as mentioned by the previous speakers, in the last century, there has been a tremendous reduction in biodiversity. And key causes of biodiversity loss are habitat loss and fragmentation due to urbanization, deforestation, and agriculture. So biologists really believe that in order to combat biodiversity loss, it is important to maintain landscape connectivity that can help reduce inbreeding and increase genetic diversity. Here, this is from the New York Times Science in 2006. They had an article about this project to connect the Yellowstone to Yukon with wildlife corridors. The idea, so biologists believe that wildlife corridors is a way of preserving wildlife habitat against land fragmentation. It's a way of linking core biologic areas, allowing animal movement, but in general, there is not much money, so the budgets are very small. So how can we integrate these biologic considerations with economic considerations? That is a key, one of the questions. We are working with researchers from the Rocky Mountain Research Station, and here we have an example of an application where we want to design a wildlife corridor connecting these three reserves, the Glacial Park, Yellowstone, and Salmon's Salway, for grizzly bears and other animals. And, you know, again, I can represent this problem as a network where I have different parcels that are represented with different nodes. And now, if I want to find the minimal cost solution, and here we have a corridor connecting all the reserves, this problem is what we refer to as the Steiner tree problem, that is one of those nasty NP-hard problems. But again, this is a worst-case result. And just to make the point that we can leverage from other domains, well, you probably have had video conferencing, and when we have to decide how to connect the different computers for a session, we are essentially solving the exact same problem, the Steiner tree problem. Well, typically, we hopefully there's more money than just a tiny little minimal corridor, then that leads us to another problem that we will refer to as the connect subgraph problem, that in practice is actually more challenging. But again, for example, for this concrete problem, by exploiting the structure of the problem, by understanding the sources of complexity of this problem, decomposing it and identifying tractable portions that can be solved in polynomial time, we actually were able to find the optimal solution for the minimal cost corridor, which in general, the literature, you will find simulations that don't really find optimal solutions typically. We were able to find the optimal solution. When we have more money than the minimal budget, we can again either prove optimality or show that we are within 1% of the optimality. And that is quite remarkable. In fact, we can decrease dramatically the cost of corridors by having a principal approach that is really going to exploit structure of the problem. We are now further extending this research, in fact, designing corridors for wolverines and lynx. Do you know what a wolverine is? I didn't. I actually only knew the X-Men. I thought it would be a mean wolf, but actually it is a mean weasel. They are highly endangered. And again, you know, by looking at this problem, we discover features that other problems really, they were not relevant. When we are now planning for multiple species, we really need to factor in that the habitat requirements for the wolverines are different from the requirements for the lynx, etc. Therefore, this problem, we had to create another prototype problem or abstraction where we have now the Steiner multigraph problem that generalizes existing results to multiple species. And guess what? Well, the same algorithms that we are now designing methodologies for corridors for multiple species can also be applied to other domains, namely wireless networks. For example, we have a project with India to study how to monitor forests, but many other applications. And this is actually important and exciting too, so that the computer science like study problems across different domains. So I just want to mention that I mentioned the project in India where we are monitoring forests. The number of tigers killed a year is just dramatic. But we are very aware that one of the key problems about poaching has to do with economic conditions. So these populations, their likelihood actually depends on killing an animal. So in order to address this problem, we really need to look at creating incentives for combating poaching, which we are doing. This is actually led by John Conrad. So there are many, many other levels of complexity. And of course, I would need several hours and Norm would not be happy. So, but how do we get the data? How do we know what the species like? How do we understand the habitat suitability for the different species? Movements, migrations, understanding of species interactions, climate change, etc. There are many levels of complexity that we are addressing. I already talked about, for example, the role of sensors and sensor networks, and there are many interesting computational challenges to scale up solutions. And also, there's a very exciting sensor that is the human sensor. And Cornell has an amazing program, the citizen science program at the Lab of All, the eBird. The eBird really allows anybody interested in birds to contribute to research. Children, grown-up scientists, amateurs. So it's quite wonderful, and it's actually a way of us for us to get labeled data, and also it is a way of increasing the scientific literacy of populations. We actually are working with the Lab of All, providing computational support and methodology. And basically, by combining data from a variety of sensors, eBird, but also land cover sensors and remote sensing data and meteorology, we were able to actually produce the state of the birds report that really gives the first account of the state of the birds in the public lands in the US. And just for you to have an idea, we were to produce this report, we used 10 years of computation, but we actually did that in like 2 or 3 months. And here, and this work allows us to have a better understanding of the migration patterns of the birds. Jeff mentioned the importance of understanding bird migration because of wing power. And here you have an example of the spatial-temporal modeling of this indigo bunting, and this was done by Daniel Fink. You see how the bird arrives in April, then in June it starts going south and leaves the US at the end of November. I'll let you see this animation one more time. But I think I'm running out of time, so let me move on. And I want to now mention that we have many other problems. And the same way we are building models for species distributions, we also want to build models for poverty mapping. Again, you see how we can leverage models and algorithms from one domain to another. We are also, this is actually led by Chris Barrett, poverty mapping and the study of migrations of pastoral tribes. We also have several projects concerning natural resource management. And for example, I have a student working on sequential decision making, and he's working on models to control fisheries, how to manage a fishery, when to open and close a fishery. And what's interesting, the same models can be used to manage, and in fact, he's working also on managing the battery of a car. We have also other projects. For example, with Bruce Vandover for automatic analysis of X-ray diffractions for materials discovery, in particular for fuel cell technology. And you will be surprised that methodologies that we use to study birds, to decide where we should send the bird watchers to collect data to increase the accuracy of our models. These kinds of models are also used for us to decide how to sample and how to obtain data to build this phase map. We also, Antonio Bentley is also working on the impact of biofuel policies, and we have many other projects. Finally, I would like to say that part of our mission is how to nurture this community, and in fact, computational sustainability is now a field way beyond us. We had the first conference at Cornell. The second one was already The main chair was Brian Williams at MIT. The third conference is going to be in Copenhagen, actually in July. We also have several special tracks in computer science. Conferences are really very important. Our refereed papers at conferences are worth a lot. So it's important for us to have a conference. So we have, there are several tracks now on computational sustainability and workshops. So in summary, I believe that computational sustainability can dramatically contribute to the study of the computational challenges in sustainability questions. And at the same time, this area, this field, can advance our own field, can advance the state of the art of computing and information science. Thank you.